Thank you, Meenu, for invitation and introduction. So yeah, as Meenu said, like, I'm a postdoc at Polytechnic. I've joined Polytechnic in October, and so today I'm gonna talk about some work I've done as a PhD student at UNM with Ivan, Pablo, and Manuel. All right, so the idea is that, like, right now we are in this noisy intermediate scale quantum era known as NISQ era, where we have systems with hundreds of qubits and no full fault tolerant error correction. And the goal of these NISQ era devices is to perform a task that is less challenging than universal quantum computing, but that can still surpass the capabilities of a classical computer. And one of the contenders for achieving this task is quantum simulation. And with quantum simulation, one is typically interested in obtaining phase diagram of some phase transition. And with these phase diagrams, you know, one is, like, also interested in, like, looking at order parameter, which is a macroscopic property of the system. So since, you know, small errors like single spin flip errors are unlikely to affect these macroscopic properties, we expect quantum simulation to be a little bit robust to those noise and imperfections. However, we do not fully yet understand that. So, you know, part of my project is to try to explore along these directions and specifically understand if there are, like, certain physical properties of the system, you know, that affect how robust or fragile the simulation is. So, for instance, right, like, one could say, you know, let's say if I'm simulating a chaotic system, one could ask, is the simulation robust or fragile? Likewise, you could ask about other properties of the system. All right, so, you know, broadly speaking, you know, quantum simulation is of, like, two types. One is Hamiltonian-based simulation or emulation, where you prepare the Hamiltonian of interest in the lab, and you let the system evolve naturally to simulate the dynamics. An example would be, you know, here, like, you know, they have, like, Chris Monroe's group, where they realize long-range icing models, and, you know, that's how they do simulation here. So the second kind is the gate-based simulation, where you break down the evolution into discrete set of unitaries, and by applying these gates, you simulate the dynamics. And, you know, for example, like, you know, here they try to simulate, numerically simulate, the icing model using, like, three kinds of gates. And if you have, like, access to universal set, obviously you can decompose arbitrary unitary. Now, one of the common algorithms in this paradigm is the Trotter-Suzuki decomposition. So suppose you have a Hamiltonian, which is sum of m terms, each of which do not necessarily commute with each other. Then, you know, the target dynamics we want to simulate is the exponential of this. However, let's say if you have access to only gates of this form, each of which, like, correspond to exponential of the Hamiltonian terms, then you can approximate the target dynamics by applying each of these gates for some small time and then repeating it n times. Now, this small time that appears here is called the Trotter step size. So I'm gonna, like, refer to applications of each of these gates for small time as U delta, and I'll call it Floquet operator for the system. And it'll become clear why I'm calling that later on. So, you know, if I apply n times this Floquet operator, I get the U trot. And then, you know, as we know, the error between U trot and U target scales as 1 over n, which is inversely proportional to the Trotter step size. So the larger the value of n, or the smaller the Trotter step size, the better this approximation is. However, you know, NISQ era devices have shallow depth circuits, because if you keep using the device for long times, eventually the noise and imperfections will dominate the simulation. Hence, one typically chooses moderate to large values of Trotter step size. As a result, the simulated output from the quantum simulator is different from the target output from the target evolution. So in this work, we would like to understand these errors and specifically try to study the physics of the system and try to get like new insights beyond the normal error bounds. All right. So the Hamiltonian we have chosen to explore these questions is called the p-spin Hamiltonian. So it describes the interaction of n spin 1 halves in some external magnetic field along z direction. I'll actually use the hockey stick, maybe it's easier. Okay, yeah. It describes interactions of n spin 1 halves in some external magnetic field along the z direction, and these spins are interacting along the x direction. It's a completely connected transverse field Ising model with p-body interactions. Now, one can define collective spin operators, which is like some of these individual Pauli operators. So in terms of these collective spin operators, that Hamiltonian up to some constant, you can write it as follows, you know, where you have jz term and jx to the power p term. And S here is the control parameter that interpolates the Hamiltonian from jz to jx to the power p as you vary S from 0 to 1. And this Hamiltonian has a couple of symmetries. So first one is it commutes with J square. So we could like focus on dynamics in the symmetric subspace. As a result, like this is like the Hilbert space dimension grows with as like n plus 1. It is classically simulable, but we can still like use it as a toy model to analyze the Trotter errors. And then it has this parity operator, which is just rotation around z axis by 180 degrees. And you can sort of see this because this term will like take jx to minus jx. And when p is even, the term remains invariant. So the Hamiltonian is invariant for even values of p under this parity operator. All right. So the case of p equal to 2 is called the Lipkin-Meshkov-Glick model or the LMG model. So this model has been like is well known and well studied in the context of many body physics or phase transitions and quantum simulation, and you know and it's like of interest because we can like try to study the phase transitions in these models to understand like many body physics. So in this case, this model has a ground state quantum phase transition at s equal to 1 half. And you can sort of see that because at s equal to 0, the ground state is just like all spins up along the z axis. And at s equal to 1, the Hamiltonian is just jx square. So the ground states are all spins up along x and down along x. And the character of this ground state changes at s equal to 1 half. So here on the right, I plotted the energy spectrum of this Hamiltonian as a function of S. So the thick lines here correspond to the positive parity eigenstates and the dotted lines correspond to the negative parity eigenstates. And you can see the presence of this ground state quantum phase transition by closing of the energy gap around S equal to 1 half. All right. So now let's look at the mean field description of this model to get some more intuition about the dynamics. So the mean field limit is actually exactly equal to the thermodynamic limit and the classical limit in these models. So we obtain the mean field by looking at the Heisenberg equations of motion, and then you just ignore correlations between observables. And then so here x, y, z are the normalized expectation values of jx, jy, and jz. Now, you know, if I solve this, if I treat this Hamiltonian as like one big spin top and use like Poisson bracket formulation, I'll also obtain the same equations of motion. So that's why the mean field limit is same as the classical limit. And now I could like solve these equations of motion for different initial conditions in the classical limit. Oops. And we can obtain like phase-based trajectories. So basically, because of the conservation of the angular momentum, all the trajectories are confined to a sphere, surface of a sphere. And so here, I'm plotting these trajectories for different values of s. So for small values of s, as we expect, the trajectories are just like precessions around the z-axis, because the Hamiltonian there is dominated by jz term. And then as you increase the s, the fixed point at z equal to 1 becomes unstable at s equal to 1/2. And then it breaks into two other fixed points. And this process of breaking a single fixed point into two other fixed points is called a 1 to 2 bifurcation. So as a result, for like, so note that this happens at s equal to 1/2, which is also the critical point of the ground state quantum phase transition. So as a result, for s greater than 1/2, there are like two kinds of trajectories, ones that precess around these fixed points, and then ones that go around the whole sphere. Now, this trajectory, which separates like two kinds of motion, which has like the shape of number 8, it's called the separatrix in the nonlinear dynamics. Now, as s is increased, the region bounded by this separatrix increases, and these fixed points move farther and farther away from this unstable fixed point here. All right, so maybe some of you might have already noticed, you know, these trajectories look very close to a system whose potential is changing from a single well, transitions to a double well at s equal to 1/2, and remains a double well with increasing barrier depth for s greater than 1/2. And this connection can be made rigorous in like many ways using semi-classical methods, you know. So for instance, right, like about the correspondence, so you could think about like these precessions as like particle oscillating in this well, right? And then here, you know, you could think about like rotations around the fixed point as particle oscillating in either of these wells. And then the rotations around the whole z-axis corresponds to a particle oscillating with energy higher than the barrier depth. And then, you know, as I said, like, you could, like, write this using semi-classical methods, you know, using Schwinger representation and so on. And then, for those who are, like, familiar with, like, Landau-Ginzburg theory, this is what, like, exactly you would expect for the free energy, right? So, so there's, like, one global minima, and then this global minima breaks down into two other global minima right at the critical point of the phase transition. And then the order parameter, which corresponds to the value of x at the global minima, changes continuously from 0 to non-zero values. Now, we could do the same thing for other higher p-spin models. And an important property of these models with p greater than 3 or equal to 3 is that they all have first order ground state phase transitions as opposed to second order for p equal to 2. Now, if you do the same thing as before, if I solve those equations of motion for different initial conditions, I get phase trajectories like the ones shown here. And then you can sort of make a correspondence between these phase space figures and a system whose potential is changing from a single well to a triple well. So here, again, as before, you have these precessions around the z-axis, which correspond to particle oscillating in this well. Now, as you keep increasing s, at this point called spinodial point, the system develops a local minima. And, you know, these correspond to like these precessions around the fixed points located on either side. Now, as you keep increasing s, right at the critical point, these local minima become global minima. And then, you know, as you keep increasing s, this will remain global minima. And, you know, you could all, like, you could see exact correspondence on the phase space figures too. Now, here, again, in accordance with the Landau-Ginzburg theory, the order parameter, which is the x value of the global minima, is 0 here. And then all of a sudden, at the critical point, it jumps to a non-zero value, which is what you would expect in a first-order phase transition, also known as discontinuous phase transition. So finally, as you can see, like, all these trajectories are regular. So the dynamics is regular as opposed to chaotic dynamics. All right. Okay. So in the introductory slide, I said, like, you know, we are interested in understanding the relationship between properties of the physical system and how errors accumulate. So one property that could be interesting to us is like chaos. So in classical mechanics, these chaotic systems are characterized by exponential sensitivity to initial conditions. That is, so if I start two initial conditions which are close by, their separation will increase exponentially in time. And strength of the chaos in systems is determined by this parameter lambda, which is also called the Lyapunov exponent. And a classical system is chaotic only if the number of degrees of freedom are greater than the conserved quantities. So in the LMG model or the P-spin models, we can think about this as one big spin. So that's why, you know, it had like two-dimensional phase space, which was a sphere. And since energy of the system was conserved, it is regular, as we have seen. Okay. Now, so in the upcoming slides, I'll often mention a quantum system to be chaotic. By that I mean, if I take the classical limit, it will show chaotic dynamics. All right, so, okay. All right, so now, like, you know, we can go back to the Trotter dynamics and so on, where we started this talk. All right, so as I said again, like, quickly repeating, you know, so now our, like, target Hamiltonian is a P-spin Hamiltonian, and target dynamics is the exponential of this Hamiltonian. Now, the Trotter dynamics is like, you know, you apply this HX Hamiltonian, HZ Hamiltonian, and then repeat it n times. And then we have this Floquet operator U delta, which is just product of this and this term. Now, one can write a time-dependent periodic Hamiltonian whose solution for one time period is U delta. And so that Hamiltonian can be written as sum of target Hamiltonian and a time dependent term. So this raises an interesting possibility, because now our target dynamics is regular. However, because the energy is not conserved anymore, the simulated Hamiltonian could potentially be chaotic. And, you know, I mean, yeah, so this is basically the same thing, because energy is not conserved anymore. So this Hamiltonian could show chaotic dynamics. Okay. So that same Hamiltonian H delta in the previous slide is shown here. So basically, you have the same linear term. However, the nonlinear term is periodically driven at integer multiples of the Trotter step size. And this it's called quantum kicktop, and it's been, like, well studied in the field, like, you know, particularly when looking at studying chaos. So, you know, as before, you could, like, try to solve the classical equations of motion, and then you could look at their phase space trajectories again. So here, so before I've shown you on the sphere, like, now you're just looking at these phase space trajectories from above and from below. And so I've fixed value of s, and then I'm changing Trotter step size, right? So for small values of the Trotter step size, this is exactly what we expect in the target dynamics, right? So this is, remember, this is for p equal to 2, and we see that double well structure, and then there's this separatrix, right, separating these two kinds of motion. And, you know, that's what happens for small values of Trotter step size. Now, as you increase tau, So in nonlinear dynamics, there is this theorem which says that whenever you add a perturbation to an integrable system, it first starts becoming chaotic around the separatrix. And like you can sort of see chaos by this region which looks like a shaded region, but basically you don't have a periodic orbit in here and like the particle like goes around. And one more thing, right? I forgot to mention, which is like here, we are looking at flow kit dynamics, which means we are looking at the action. So I start an initial condition and then I look at what happens after one tau. So it's not, these are, even though they look like they're continuous, they're not necessarily continuous. So, you know, at initial time it could be here, and then the next time it could be here, and so on. So the trajectory would jump, but then if you evolve them for a long time, they would look like these continuous trajectories. Okay. Now, you know, as I was saying, at tau equal to 2, you can already sort of see chaos around separatrix. And then as you keep increasing tau, eventually the whole phase space will be dominated by chaos. Now notice though, this is like really large tau. And then, you know, now if you sort of like repeat this analysis for S smaller than 1/2, it's actually very hard for them to become chaotic unless you make tau to be very, very large. So this mostly happens for S greater than 1/2. Okay. All right.
So why is tau equals 7 very large? Like, it doesn't seem that big. Tau is like a time parameter?
Yeah, so. Let's see. So, I mean, yeah, so this was my, ignoring all the constants. Let's put it beta jx square. And then I'm like trotterizing this, right? I guess maybe like I'm calling tau to be large by the fact that the dynamics is very different, like in the sense like, so just to complete, like, you know, this could be tau, right? So in the sense like, so I'm comparing this dynamics to this dynamics, and I'm calling tau to be large when the dynamics of this is like very, very different from this.
Oh, tau is the trotter step
size. Yeah, yeah.
So it should be something small.
But. Yeah, exactly. Okay, but thank you for asking though. I'll quickly mention, right, where this time period come in, right? So here, tau is the trotter step size, right? Now, if I'm like trying to write a Hamiltonian whose solution for one time period is this, that Hamiltonian is periodic with tau as its time period. Okay, perfect. Yeah. All right. Okay. So, you know, and then like one could now ask, right? Like, okay, I'm like trying to simulate these regular dynamics. And if I increase tau to large values, which is the trotter step size, what would happen to the errors, trotter errors? And that has been like studied in like these three papers. And you know, and these are like various kinds of spin systems. In all those systems, what they found was if tau is made large enough, the system dynamics will always become chaotic, even the target Hamiltonian is regular. And moreover, what they found was if you look at the magnetization errors as a function of trotter step size, these errors will increase sharply right when the dynamics of U delta changes from regular to chaotic. So, you know, obviously like when tau is small, because the approximation is good, you'll have like regular dynamics, but then if you keep increasing tau, at some point it becomes chaotic, and then the magnetization errors increase by a lot at that point. Okay. All right. So, in our work though, initially we have been working along these directions, and then we got scooped. So, and then we started, like, we kept working in this direction. And then we, so what we found was there were like other mechanisms that also lead to such large trotter errors. And so, like, you know, that's what I'm going to be, you know, that's what are the results of our paper. Yeah.
So, sorry, I don't understand this. On the
bottom. Okay.
So the vertical axis is delta M of.
Yeah. So this is just magnetization error, but it's not like absolute value.
At some time.
Time average, sorry, yeah. Sorry.
The horizontal axis is trotter
step. Uh-huh. So, sorry, maybe I should let you complete your question.
Okay, so this is the error in the magnetization at certain time.
I see. So if one thing I would do is, like, let's say, right, I have some initial state, so I'm going to call this U target, and then I have some initial state, and then I act with U target, I have psi of t. And then I look at, let's say, for example, right, I look at the mean value of jx. And then time average this. So, yeah. So this is like my, let me call M target. Yeah. So I guess they still kept this, but then, yeah. Maybe that might have been the confusion. But then, you know, I do the same thing, right? M trot under this unitary. And then I look at the difference between them. And that's the behavior. Yeah. But this is not my mistake. I just got it from the paper, so, you know. Yeah.
But what is the small t you choose?
What is the small t?
Small t, what is the t you choose?
Yeah, so I'm saying, like, so t here, I mean, in my view, this should not be there, because you evolve it for some time. I mean, so you could evolve it for long times. Does that make sense or no?
Oh, so that I should regard it as an infinite time average.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's why, like, I think this t, like, makes it confusing, but that's what this is, like, plot from the paper itself. So,
I see. Okay.
Yeah. All right, okay. So now, like, a way to identify these higher error regions is to see where the eigenstates of U target are very different from those of U delta. So obviously, like, U delta is this, right? Which is like n applications of U delta will give U trot. And you could see this, you know, from a semi-classical point of view, actually. So if you plot something like Hussimi distribution of time evolution operator, the Hussimi distribution will overlap with the corresponding classical trajectories. So then you could see, you know what, like, you could try to do this for U target, then you get those Hussimi distribution that looks exactly like its corresponding phase space trajectories. And then you could do that for U target, and then you get, U delta, whose eigenstates will look like the trotter dynamic trajectories. And then whenever they're very different, the corresponding eigenstates will be very different, and therefore you expect high errors. That's like motivation from, like, semi-classical point of view, why we are looking, or why we expect these higher error regions to have very different, you know, eigenstates of U target very different from U delta. And we do that through this quantity called average dissimilarity. So, and it's like defined through inverse participation ratio. So this inverse participation ratio is defined here. Let's say, right, like, and then so I have, like, these are the eigenstates of the target unitary. These are the eigenstates of U delta. Now, if two eigenbases are very similar or exactly same, then this average IPR will be 1. And then, so in that case, if I plug it 1 here, so dissimilarity is 0 because they're exactly same. And likewise, you could think about, you know, one of the bases being completely delocalized in the other bases. In that case, IPR will be 1 over D. And then if I plug it in here, this similarity will be closer to 1. And then, you know, I'm normalizing this based on, you know, what we expect for chaotic systems. But like you can ignore that part. So basically, so I plotted this dissimilarity as a function of Trotter step size and control parameter S. So the bright green regions here and here are the regions where the eigenstates of U target and U delta are very different. So in the second row, I plotted classical Lyapunov exponents of U delta, which corresponds to the Trotter dynamics. And then as you, again, you know, as a function of Trotter step size and S, as you can see, chaos mostly appears for these large values of S. And you know, that's where it is in accordance with what we saw with the corresponding phase space trajectories earlier, right? For S larger than 1/2, the phase space had like separatrices, and that's where the chaos developed. Yeah, please.
So suppose you took the Trotter step size to be larger and larger, like even larger than the on this plot. Would you get chaos at any fixed value of S? Like if I take S of 0.2, like will that
be
chaotic eventually?
Yes, it will be eventually. It's just, I guess, so what happens is like there'll be a lot of bifurcations, which leads to those separatrices again at large values of the Trotter step size. And then it will start to develop chaos.
It looks like, I mean, is the color just hard to perceive? Like, it looks like it's zero in that blue region.
Yeah. So for these values, it is zero.
It's actually zero.
Yeah. It's just like, I don't know, if you go like tau to be like 10, that's when you start to see slightly chaotic for like S equal to 0.2.
It's like exactly zero? Like you're taking n...
I mean, so these Lyapunov exponents are like numerically obtained, right?
Oh, I see.
So it's like what is zero is in some sense like you either assume, like, you know, I guess like if you look at those separations between the nearby trajectories, and then you sort of have to think, oh, do they look exponential or not? So yeah. You know, but like, you know, again, if you look at the corresponding classical trajectories, though, they'll be periodic. So that's why I would say Lyapunov exponent is 0. All right. So, okay. All right. So, and then, like, so what is the point of this, right? So this chaos sort of explains why the dissimilarity is large here for large values of S. However, there are, like, additional regions for small values of S. And, you know, sort of, I would call it the moderate values of Trotter step size, where there is dissimilarity but no chaos. And these are exactly what we are going to call structural instability regions. And this is what, like, you know, I'm going to talk about next. And these are called structural instability regions because, as I'll show you, if you look at their corresponding classical phase space trajectories, they change very rapidly as I change tau or Trotter step size.
So, is this,
yeah.
I ask, what is the value of J in the quantum case here?
Yeah, thank you. So, it's around 100. Yeah. All right. And then I guess this is to just show that, oh, we even have analytic expressions that exactly coincide with them. All right. And, you know, so the way we were like trying to tackle this problem is using unitary perturbation theory. So for this, right, so we assume like small values of S. And so this corresponds to paramagnetic phase of the target Hamiltonian. So in that case, you can treat the second term as a perturbation. And then, so the unperturbed term is this term. So it has eigenstates of Jz, And then you can sort of write first order correction to those eigenstates. And the phases that appear in the denominator are the unperturbed eigenphases. So what's the point of this, right? So whenever you see, whenever like these phases like tend to become degenerate, the first order correction becomes huge in the neighborhood of that degeneracy. And you know, these are the regions we are calling structural instability regions. So, you know, the location of these regions is given by this formula, where, you know, for a given p-spin model, there is this parameter q, which is allowed to change from p, p minus 2 all the way down to 2 or 1. And this just follows from this expression. Wherever this becomes degenerate, and when the when the matrix elements of jx to the power p are not zero. All right. So I know like this is all like abstract. We can like try to get like better intuition by looking at specific case, right? So if I just plug in p equal to 2, so and then there's only one choice for q, and that is this. So we get like this is the center point of this structural instability region, and the Floquet operator is shown here. So as you might have already seen or noticed, the first operator is the parity operator. And we already know this term is invariant under the action of parity because Jz will take Jx to minus x. So basically saying these two terms commute, so we can find a common set of eigenvectors. And we know the eigenvectors of this second term is just Jx square eigenstates. So all we have to do is like find appropriate combinations which are invariant under the action of parity. And they're just like symmetric and anti-symmetric combinations of Jx square eigenstates. So what's happening is that like if you look at the eigenstates as a function of Trotter step size, at least for small values of s, when tau is far away, you have eigenstates that resemble those of Jz eigenstates. And then as you increase Trotter step size, the eigenstates will slowly change its character towards those of Jx square. And then as you keep increasing tau, they become Jz eigenstates again. And if you look at the corresponding classical phase space, you will see that these changes are like facilitated by bifurcations happening, where a single fixed point splits into multiple fixed points. So here, also q is related to the kind of bifurcation happening. So for p equal to 2, q can only be 2. And so it's saying there's 1 to 2 bifurcation happening on the phase space. And I'll show you the phase space figures later on so it becomes even clearer. All right. So, okay. So here. I guess like so far I've not shown you like what the errors themselves look like. So here like we are now focusing on long-term average of Jz. So the error is just like absolute value of Jz average under target unitary minus Jz average under trotterized unitary. And we are looking at in this regime where s is small. So here on the right, I have these errors plotted as a function of Trotter step size. So this is for p equal to 2, 3, and 4. So the blue, red, and the green curves show the error opted numerically. And to better understand this, again, we were able to find a perturbation theory expression for these regions. And basically, this expression, right, it says that there is error at every instability region. And that error is sort of like characterized by this cotangent term. And like, so I'm plotting this as a dotted line here. Right, so it overlaps very well with the numerically obtained curve. And like these arrows show the regions where we expect instability region by this formula. So they appear exactly where we expect them to appear. And like the other thing to notice is like, as I increase p, there are like more values of q. And so you see more and more of these peaks. So for p equal to 3, you have 2 and 4. And then also, because as you increase q, this Trotter step size becomes smaller. So these regions tend to appear at smaller and smaller values of the Trotter step size. And then finally, there is this like trade-off though. The smaller the value of Trotter step size at which they appear, the narrower the error region is. So this is like wider compared to this one. All right. Okay. So now, like, you know, that was all like numerics. Now, what we were able to find was like we can actually do some like look at the corresponding phase space trajectories and have like some nice explanation to all of this. And also, we were able to construct an effective Hamiltonian, which is time independent, whenever tau is Trotter step size is chosen to be in these regions. So for instance, right, for p equal to 2, if I actually look at dynamics at every second step, so u delta squared, then we were able to construct an effective Hamiltonian. So in this case, the effective Hamiltonian has the same form as the target Hamiltonian, because our target Hamiltonian was LMG Hamiltonian, and this effective Hamiltonian is also LMG. However, the S effective is larger than 1/2. So what we are trying to do is like simulate dynamics for small values of S, but then if you look at dynamics at every second step, it is simulating the ferromagnetic phase. And this is like very evident on the phase space figures, right? So the target evolution is just like precessions around the z-axis. And then if you look at the Trotter evolution, so right at the center of this instability region, you see that there's like very, very different. They're basically precessions around the x-axis. And then as you keep increasing tau, so there is like this fixed point, which is like the center of the lobe, and there's like one more fixed point on the other side. They start to come closer and closer. Right at the edge of the stability region, they combine, resulting in this 1 to 2 bifurcation. And then for tau beyond the instability region, these phase space trajectories again look very similar to the target evolution. Maybe I'll ask any questions. I know I've been like going fast, maybe.
I mean, yeah, I have a question, but it's not really about this slide. It's more just, so, I mean, you're studying kind of the behavior of the Hamiltonian evolution when it's trotterized as a function of the Trotter step size using a semi-classical model. But what can you glean about, or what kind of conclusions can you draw for models that are not, you know, big spins, so to speak, like don't have a semi-classical description?
Yeah. So maybe I'll, so one thing, right? Like, so I, let's
see. It's okay if you want to answer it later in the talk.
Yeah, I can definitely, because I think some of those things might become clearer later on. So, yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah, and then likewise, you can like try to see the same thing for p equal to 4. In this case, you have like two possibilities for q, 2 or 4. And then q equal to 2, it's accommodated by 1 to 2 bifurcation and 1 to 4 bifurcation. However, so notice that here, effective Hamiltonian is like not even the p-spin Hamiltonian we want to simulate. It's like completely different one. And that's like, again, evident on these phase space trajectories. And then now you have like these four lobes, two on this side, two on the other side. As you increase Trotter step size away from these regions, these four lobes will combine, giving 1 to 4 bifurcation. All right. And then you can sort of like repeat this. So in the most general case for a general p-spin model and given value of q, the Hamiltonian is given here. And what you can notice is that this effective Hamiltonian has this additional symmetry, which is, you know, this Hamiltonian being invariant under 2 pi over q rotations. Note that this was not there in the target Hamiltonian. So that's why you were seeing so far, like, you know, this phase space was invariant under these rotations. So if q equal to 4, right, so it's invariant under pi over 2 rotations. So that's why you saw, like, you know, 4 lobes. So likewise, you know, for arbitrary q, you would see q lobes. And then this symmetry will be lost when you increase tau beyond these regions. So that's why there's like 1 to q bifurcation when you go beyond these instability regions. Okay. Okay. And then one like a tiny thing. Though so far, like I've said, oh, you know, bifurcations are like responsible for like lots of these changes. But I do want to mention that not all bifurcations lead to large Trotter errors. Only bifurcations that appear in these regions tend to lead to very rapid and significant changes in the phase space. Okay. All right. So maybe I'm trying to maybe, because I think my talk is longer than what I anticipated, but so I'll like try to quickly go through this part because I think it's very interesting. So okay, we can actually forget about Trotter errors for a minute and just look at non-equilibrium properties of this kicked p-spin model. And it turns out it has like very interesting non-equilibrium properties. So for instance, right? So if my Hamiltonian is this, this Hamiltonian has this time translation symmetry, which is saying that it's periodic with time period tau. Now what we were able to find was this system actually has subharmonic response for a range of initial conditions. By that I mean, if I pick some initial conditions, and if I look at some observable, there are certain observables which oscillate with m times the time period of the Hamiltonian. So in that sense, you are breaking the time translation symmetry of the system. So for instance, right, if you go back to p equal to 4, so again, like there's q equal to 2 case where you had like 2 lobes. So if I start an initial condition that's close to the center of this lobe, after one time period, it will jump to the other one. And then the second time period, it comes back. And likewise, if you have q equal to 4, every fourth period, it comes back to the point closer to the initial point. So, you know, for example, you could look at the JY expectation value, and it would oscillate with time period twice the time period of the Hamiltonian in this case, or 4 times the time period of the Hamiltonian. And this behavior is like robust to small variations in parameter. So by that I mean, you don't have to choose like fine-tune tau or the Trotter step size for this behavior to happen. As long as Trotter step size is like reasonably within these instability regions, you see this kind of behavior. And like what's the point of all of this? Is like I'm showing basically these all properties correspond to time crystal phases. So that's something interesting we have found here. Maybe I'll skip this, but you could also like essentially like notice scrambling, which could be related to fixed points again. And then I like quickly like try to summarize what we found so far. Right. So basically, we found this new mechanism that leads to large Trotter errors. And in these regions, we found Trotter dynamics is very different from the target dynamics. And we were able to characterize these regions using unitary perturbation theory. And then moreover, we were able to find this effective Hamiltonian that describes what's happening in these regions. Finally, these instability regions also had interesting properties like time crystal-like behavior and so on. So, and with that, I like to thank you for your attention. So I'll like try to answer your question then. Let me see. Okay, maybe. Okay, so you know, I don't know. So let's say let's look at this Hamiltonian, right? This is like typically realized in ion trap systems, and if I choose alpha to be zero, it is the LMG Hamiltonian, and if I take alpha to be infinity, it is the nearest neighbor Ising model. So like when people have studied this, they have studied like dynamical quantum phase transitions. And so the LMG model has dynamical quantum phase transition. And what they found is you could change this alpha. And so maybe. This is alpha. And then so at alpha equal to 0, you have LMG. And then nearest neighbor Ising model somewhere at infinity. So what they found was like, I think it's some number like 1 or 2 or so. So what they found was this, so dynamical phase transitions, when you study them in the case of the LMG, they were sort of able to explain this behavior for like a range of alpha. So the point being, so like the point for us is that we expect similar kind of stuff with structural instability regions. So it's not going to be like, oh, alpha equal to 0, they have this behavior. And for any non-zero alpha, it's going to vanish. So it's just like, you know, at least like by studying closely, I think we could like predict something about this range of alphas by studying carefully alpha equal to 0 case. So that is one point. The other point is, so as we have noticed, like this system had like subharmonic response, so basically like relating to time crystal phases, and it's something we want to study later on and see, oh, you know, maybe there could be other time crystal phases, and can we like relate them to these like Trotter errors? So that's something, you know, to explore.
So the way to understand that space diagram is like for small alpha, it's like the mean field is very good, so like,
yeah,
understand classically, so like,
yeah,
classical, like a Kantian theory guarantee there's some stable region, so error doesn't accumulate for a long time, is that right?
So,
for,
so
classicalness guaranteed this kind of.
So because so far, like in this presentation, I've just talked about alpha equal to 0.
Yeah.
And we have still seen, like, there are errors if you take Trotter step size to be large, right?
But no, I mean for smaller charters, small charters.
Okay. Yeah. And then, sorry, like, do you mind like repeating? So what was the question then?
Yeah, I guess I'm just checking my understanding, like, all right, so let me consider the alpha to be zero limit. Let's go to a couple. So like, it's your exam, right?
Yeah.
And for the case where there's no charter error, there's unstable orbit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means, you know, you can just predict everything very nicely, but if you do the Trotter error, you add some kick for the dynamics, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then, but a classical, like a KM theory guaranteed, you can still have an orbit to survive
mm-hmm.
for small error, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the way, so I guess my understanding is just that whenever you can approximate the model to be some classical limit,
mm-hmm.
then the Trotter average, for small Trotter error, it is going to
stay,
right?
I see. I mean, yeah.
Whenever you deviate away from this mean field classical limit, then if you do any non-zero Trotter error, you just fail for a long time, right? Is that right?
So, yeah, I mean, so I also, like, there's this one thing, right? Like, so maybe, let's see. So there are like, so one thing I do want to mention is like, there are these usual Trotter bounds, right? So it says like, oh, the error like scales as like 1/n, or like, you know, with the Trotter step size. So even like when I say large Trotter errors, it's all like, these bounds are like never violated. Like it's all within the bounds. It's just, I think the Trotter errors are like generally like very smaller than what you would expect. and then we found these regions, they're not as good as one might expect. But like the errors are always like within these bounds. Like, I mean, so you could actually, like there's like a lot of inequalities, right? And you could like use exact inequalities. And in those, and then if I compute this difference, even in the instability regions, the error is always below the inequality. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah? Mm-hmm. It's just, I think, my view is like, these are like really, the Trotter approximation is actually way better than we expect. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like, there are some regions where it's not as good. Yeah.
So I want to check how much of the phenomenon you observed could remain if I do the Trotter decomposition in a different way. So here you decompose your Hamiltonian into two terms. They compete with each other. Mm-hmm. So now if I decompose the Hamiltonian in a different way, so what would happen?
Yeah, so I think lots of things would change in that case, actually. Okay. It's just, I guess, so in this case, this decomposition was like natural to us, like, oh, because it's like, oh, this corresponds to just like rotations. And then generally, like, this is the harder term to do experimentally. So this sort of like was natural in our system.
It looks natural, but,
yeah.
But those two terms favor two very different ground states. So that destabilized the time evolution. I don't know. Uh-huh. That's my suspicion.
I see. But I do agree with the point that if I do a different kind of trotterization, it will be different behavior for sure.
So the error will be more controlled.
Yeah, yeah. I guess like the point is like, yeah, like, you know, you should watch out for these, you know, these sort of instability regions.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So here you say that on an average, how different are the eigenstates of the target Hamiltonian versus the factorized ones?
Yeah.
So in the case that you studied, I guess all the eigenstates are different. For the two cases,
uh-huh.
Suppose there is a case where only a subset of eigenstates are different. How much difference will it make in the quantum simulation?
Okay. Yeah.
Any idea? Like.
Yeah. So.
Open question.
Yeah. I mean, again, so because it's like there's a classical limit,
yeah.
So things become easier to explain and see actually. So okay, let's see. Maybe okay. Yeah, this is a good example actually. Right. Yeah. So. If I plot the Hussein mean distribution, right? It'll for one eigenstate, it'll just overlap with this, and
yeah.
So on, right? So now, if I take this case, right?
Yeah.
So like, almost all of these eigenstates are very similar to this.
Yeah.
Except like these.
Okay. Yeah.
So I guess yeah. So in that case, depending on where you start your initial condition. So the you know, here, right, like for example, if I start anywhere, it's most likely to have that error.
Yeah.
But then here, the range of initial conditions for which you expect high error will be smaller.
So it depends on the initial quantum state that we are simulating that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay, I guess on Zoom, I don't see any questions.
I have one more question.
Yeah, please.
So you mentioned this subharmonic response is robust. In general, how should one check whether such subharmonic response is robust?
Yeah.
How should one check it?
Oh, how should one check it? So generally, right, like one has a, it's like, so there is like two things. One is like, do the oscillations, like, so if you see, you know, there is like some observable F sub O or something. And then I'll go to that slide so that it makes sense. Let's see. So here, right, like one thing is like to note is like, oh, that this does not happen for like some fine-tuned parameters. So in that case, it's not a phase, right? So here, so this kind of stuff happens for whenever tau is chosen to be in these instability regions. Let's say like I would look at something like JY expectation value and see if it oscillates with multiple time period. So the Hamiltonian is oscillating with time period tau. And then here for Q equal to 2, it oscillates with time period 2 tau, right? And then so as long as like you can change the parameters in the Hamiltonian and see if this behavior continues to happen. Does that make sense? It's like if this behavior happens only for a particular value of tau, then I wouldn't say it's robust. But then I change the range of parameters and I still see it persists, then I would say, you know, it is robust to those small parameter changes.
But genetically, there are infinitely many ways of changing the Hamiltonian. How should I know how robust it is?
So yeah, that is true. I guess for me, it's like, let's say I'm because in some sense, it's like easier to check in this case because I know like how we can expect how the phase space figures change. But like I'm thinking, let's see. Yeah, so I would definitely say that's like some hard question. Like, I mean, it's not like commonly discussed, but like here I'm like very sure that it is robust just because of the way these trajectories change. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's like, you know, it's not like there are these two fixed points that suddenly disappear as soon as long as I change tau by delta tau or something. They'll change continuously and slowly.
Questions? Not let us thank the speaker once again.